Okay, at this time, the chairperson should briefly qualify. Requirements for chairing a meeting at the Central Orlando Group Saturday Night Speakers Meeting are 1 year of continuous sobriety, have Central as your home group, and attend a group conscious meeting. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Jim Powers.
Amen.
My sobriety date is February 18th, 2002, and I attend every group conscious meeting because this is my home group, and I want to make sure I know what's going on and try to do service to Alcoholics Anonymous because you all saved my life. I couldn't quit drinking. I drank for 30 years, and when I got here, I couldn't quit drinking. And I know today it was because of my ego. It took me 3.5 years of coming in and out of here before I almost killed myself. And I finally reached out for help, and a gentleman decided that he would sponsor me, and he took me through the invisible 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the reason they're invisible is because we're repainting the building and we're trying to freshen it up tonight. But Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life, and then it also gave me a new life, and I can never repay it, but I try every chance I get, and that's enough out of me. The group asked me to remind you to please make sure your phones are off and refrain from moving around or talking while the speaker is sharing. And to introduce the speaker, I met this lady quite a while ago, but then I had the real fortunate opportunity to go to San Antonio for the 75th anniversary of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I happened to arrive at the airport at the same time she and her son did. And the lady who dropped her off drove away with her purse, with her phone and her pills and everything else, and there was just this slight moment of panic right there. And I was able to be of service by just handed my cell phone to her son. They called the lady. She brought her purse back. We were able to get on the plane. Unfortunately for her, TSA thought that she was a terrorist, so she had to get pulled out of the line and get double-checked. And apparently they called San Antonio, because when she came back from San Antonio, they pulled her out of the line and she had to get checked. But what I'd like to do is introduce to you a lady who has worked this program one day at a time for over 18,250 days, Basha.
He tells it like it is. Yeah, my name is really Barbara, but nobody has called me that since I was 2 years old. They called me Basha, and it's a Polish nickname, and I'm going to stick with it. My sobriety date is February 13, 1961. And I can tell you, this program has saved my life, my family, and probably has done a lot for everybody around me too, because my family didn't like, they liked me, but they, you know, it's mom. That's all it was. Today I can say I've got 4 grandsons who are grown, and most of them are married. They've never seen me drunk. I've got 7 great grandchildren, and neither one of them has seen me drunk either. And to me, this is the love of my life. I didn't think I'd ever see this day. I remember there were times when I thought I was dying, and that was it. But to tell you something about my family, I grew up in Newark, New Jersey. Anybody from Newark or from New Jersey? Okay, I left there when I was 19 years old, and I go back there once in a blue moon. I still have some family there. I have my father was a doctor in the city of Newark, and he was a police surgeon of the city of Newark, and they used to bring the drunken drivers in to see, to have him check them out to see if they were drunk or not, to put them in jail. And they'd come to the house, and whether they were drunk or not, we kids would be up on the second store looking down to see who was bringing in, and people would say, is it a drunk or a shooting? And I never forget the fellow who came into the house that one night, and my father was downstairs with the examining this fellow, and my father had on this silk robe that his sister had sent him from China. And the fellow looked at my father and he says, I think you're a drunker than me. And of course he was pretty drunk, but Dad would many a time would say, no, they're not drunk, because this was during the Great Depression, and if he said they were drunk, they would lose their jobs. And at that time, you couldn't do that. Many, many of his patients paid him by bringing him fruit, chickens, things like that. But we kids, there were four of us. My sister, who is 11 years older than me, my brother, who was 2 years older than me, and my younger sister, who was 2 years younger than me. Out of the four of us, three of us were alcoholics. My brother passed away about 10, 12 years now. He was a doctor. He couldn't save himself. He died. They said it was a heart attack, but we know different. My older sister passed away about less than that. She probably passed away about 6 years ago. And my youngest sister passed away this past December. She was an alcoholic as well. My younger sister was. She was a nurse. And she didn't find the program through AA. My sister found the program through the church. And this is the only thing I can say for her. She was sober when she died, and I was happy to see her that way. But I would have loved to have seen her in the program, because she'd call me long distance, I mean 2-3 times a week, and she said, "Do you think I ought to go?" I said, "Yes, I think you ought to go." And I said, "At least you've got a place to go to talk to people and everything else like that." I said, "This is the main thing, you go to a meeting and you can be helping others." So, well, I don't know. Well, unfortunately, she had a stroke, and she never recovered from the stroke, and she died in Austin, Texas, this past December. So, Bosch is the only one left in the family now, and here I am, and I'm trying to uphold the family traditions and everything else. Like I said, I had got married when I was 19 years old and left home. First place I was stationed was with my husband here at MacDill Air Force Base in Tampa, Florida. And I didn't know what this military life was going to be like. I enjoyed it, though. Because, I mean, your cocktail hours, Sunday night, and everything else. And this is the way things went. We had parties all the time. And I enjoyed them. I thought, boy, this is going to be great. Well, 10 and a half months after I was married, I had my first child. It didn't bother me one bit. I took her every place I went. She went with me and everything else. In fact, the night we were going to a cocktail party, I was called down with my husband. I said, "Hey, you better come get me. I think I'm going to go to the hospital." And I did. So she was born in 1948. And it was quite a life. It was quite a life. My military life with my husband was very, very interesting. He was not only a pilot, he was an air traffic controller. And by the time we left Japan, he was in charge of the whole Far East there, and half the time I never knew where he was going. He'd call and say, "If you need me, call the office and they'll get in touch with me." And I said, yeah. I had gotten to use... Had to have his bag ready all the time. His son used to do his shoes every night, polish his shoes, didn't you, Paul? Yeah, he and his dad. Anyway, to a certain extent, I believe alcoholism is hereditary. I know my father drank a lot. He used to call, he'd get a bottle of brown milk every day, as he called it. He'd stop and get it, and he'd have a highball there. He had his office in the house downstairs, and he used to keep a soda and booze up on behind the baby scales upstairs there. And of course, I'd go in there and taste it every once in a while, but I didn't care for it very much at the time. Mother drank too, but I never saw her drunk. Dad, I did. Dad, I used to take to bed many times that night. Anyway, Mother died when I was 10, and Dad died when I was 13, so we kids were on our own, and my younger sister was 2 years younger than me. and it was quite hard. So high school, no problem. I'd go to a school which was down the street. I went to Eastside High. We had the East Side, West Side, South Side, you know, all that. And it worked out just great. No problems with booze, nothing. I decided I was not going to go to college. I took a secretarial course, and I worked for a couple of years and whatnot. And these were happy days. These were happy days. And even though things were very, very tight at home, we had to watch our pennies there and everything, even though we did have some money coming in from my father's after my father died and everything else. But you get on a bus for 5 cents. And I'd take that 5 cents and I put it in my pocket and I'd walk to work. And that was a couple miles. And I did this for a long time. This was before I met my husband. Well, my husband, when I went to high school, I was a freshman and he was a senior, and I hated him. He was very taken with himself. He had the biggest ego you ever wanted to see. And I thought, who is this? Anyway, my father was their family doctor, and he did a lot of things for them, too, and everything else. Out of his family, I think, well, he and his brother were the only ones who were alcoholics, but his oldest brother, which my oldest sister married my husband's oldest brother. You know, we got double cousins here and everything. We're a mixed up family. At any rate, he went into the service when he was 18. His brother went into the service. They all went to about the same time. He and his brother went, and they went and got into flying and everything else. Joe became a pilot. His brother became a navigator. Yeah, his brother was a navigator. In fact, his brother was shot down, and he was a prisoner of war, and Joe got him out of prison, too. At the end of the war, he was able to find him and take him out. His brother was in the Merchant Marines, and he had a ship shot out from under him 2 or 3 times, and he was a wonderful person. He didn't have any problem whatsoever. But I dated them all. I dated all his brothers. My sister got married, and about, oh, I guess 2 or 3 years after she got married, Joe came. The war was over by this time and everything else, and Joe came home, and he kept coming over to visit his brother and my sisters, and that's when we start hooking up together again. And I remember the very first time I got drunk was on my 18th birthday, because he took me to New York, and you were able to drink over there. And I got drunk on beer. I hated this stuff. I hated this stuff. And I said I never was going to drink that again. And I didn't for a while. You know how that goes. I mean, I used to like my cocktails. And my favorite drink was, though, what was it? Brandy Alexander? No, Brandy Alexander was after you were born. Scotch and soda. I love scotch and soda. And Joe didn't like scotch and soda. He liked beer, so we had most of the beer in the house at the time. And I got to liking beer a little bit better at the time. I'd steal his beer after we were married and all, and I'll never forget, we had some beer, and I thought, what am I going to do with this? I can't let him take all the beer, and I like some of this too. So I took some of the beer and put it in the refrigerator, and we had a refrigerator that had a drawer under the freezer, and I put it in that part there because it got it nice and cold. I forgot about it. Next day, I needed something to drink in the morning, and guess what I did? I went in there, found the beer frozen, took a tin opener, opened up the tin, and I had the first slushy anybody ever had. Well, you think you're doing good with having all these slushies around. You ought to take that beer slushie. That was real good. Yeah, I used to do things like that. We traveled a lot. He went overseas. I was drinking a little bit more and everything else. Went over to Guam, and 10 and a half months after I got over there, I had my son. I thought, oh, good grief, is this going to happen every time we move? I'm going to have a family, you know, 6, 8, 9 kids. I really wanted 6 children, but I didn't have any. I had 2. At any rate, after my son, while my son was, I was carrying my son, I was drinking. We lived in a Quonset hut on Guam because we didn't have any housing at that time and everything else. And that was something else. I got over there very quickly because Joe had to buy this place. And what they did was they had a Quonset and they split it in half with a just a what you would call a wall. And there was another couple on the other side of us and everything else. I got to Guam, and when I first got there, he had a cat, and I said, I don't like cats. And he said, you've got to have them over here. And I said, why? He said, we've got rats. We slept under mosquito nets. I had baby's crib under mosquito nets. It was one of those things, and it was a good thing we had the cats. No snakes or anything like that. We didn't have any of those things over there. I liked it over there because I was able to do everything I wanted to do. We owned, I think it was a 1935 Lincoln Zephyr we bought over there. And the thing wouldn't go up hills. So I'd go down to the beach, and when I went down to the beach, it was fine going down, but I couldn't get up, so I have to back the car up. The floorboard was gone, and you couldn't move the steering wheel, and I was pregnant at the time, so I said my son was driving before he was even born. But while I was there, I was being checked by the doctors all the time and everything. And I told him, I said, he said, how are you feeling? I said, oh, I feel pretty good, except I have this upset stomach all the time. He says, well, I don't want to give you anything. He said, I'll tell you what. Sip on a little bit of cream de menthe. It was real good. I sipped on cream de menthe from morning till night. And when that son of mine was born, I thought he was going to be born green. But he wasn't. After I had my son, I had lost a lot of weight, and believe it or not, I only weighed 110 or 112 pounds at that time. And once again, I went back and spoke to the doctor, and he says, oh, well, he says, get something nice to drink and everything else. So we go to the bar, and I was drinking Brandy Alexander. Real good. Chocolate and everything else. It was very, very good. Needless to say, about this time the Korean War broke out, and they said, if you want to go home, the women and children can go home, but the fellows will have to stay over here. And I said, I'm not leaving. I said, the only way I'm leaving is if you bring that plane, park it in my front yard, and I said, then I'll get on the plane with my husband and my children. At any rate, we left there. Just about the time the Korean War broke out, and went through one of the biggest hurricanes you ever wanted to see, and everything else. And I enjoyed it over there, though, because I had so many friends over there, and of course you could buy booze for 85 cents a bottle. The thing that was expensive was the beer. It was $3.60 a case. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Going home aboard ship, we got on a troop ship to go home to come to California. As we were going on the plane, I had come down with a terrible, terrible rash on my hands. I guess it was from the coral over there on Guam, and they were all broken out and everything else. And they finally said to my husband, would you mind not bringing her to the dining hall to eat because her hands are so bad? And she said, okay, because I used to keep them wrapped up and everything else. But we were able to have booze aboard ship. Not supposed to, right? No booze, no nothing. We happened to get a nice stateroom there and everything else, and there were quite a few other people there, and we'd get the kids to sleep at night, and everybody'd come out to the hallway, and we'd sit there and have the bottles in the room in the back, you know, and bring them out. Hey, you want some of this, or you want some of this one? And then they say, well, what are we going to do with getting rid of these bottles? Well, at that time, they were wearing these big coats, you know. And I had one that was bright orange and open. And I say, Bush, we need to get rid of this dead soldier. I say, okay. So I go in there, put my coat on, get the bottles and everything else. Walk outside, walk over to the side of the ship, you know. Something over the side. Had a good time the entire time. Learned a lot. By this time, my son was nearly a year old. My daughter was, she was going on three. And we enjoyed having them over there and everything else. The only thing is, I had had him trained before he even was a year old. We got aboard ship, and my husband was taking care of him. He had him in the bathroom one day, and he's going to kill me, I know this. And the ship lurched. Guess who fell in? Sorry. Had to retrain him real good. We came to San Diego. We stopped in Hawaii, had a good time there, and get off the ship. Well, you got to find the bars, and they're all close there, right down there, and everything else. Then we got to San Diego, and from there, he was a year old the day we landed into the United States. He went under the Golden Gate Bridge the day he was a year old. So that's one birthday we remember all the time. We did a lot of traveling after that. We did a lot of drinking. Like I said, on Guam, it was a little hard to not see people because it was such a big place, you know, 3 miles wide and, a mile long. It was a very small island. But there were a lot of people there, and we always partied, and we had a lot of good parties. We didn't have any fresh fruit or anything like that. I thought, this is terrible too. No baby food or anything else. So I had to make all my baby food and everything else. But I kept going. It worked. Like, so we came back to the United States again. And my husband had to go to Korea. So I stayed in New Jersey. And I moved to a little place. And I didn't know whether I was going to get along there or not because the kids were small. And by this time, my daughter was going to start kindergarten, but my son was still home with me. So he'd grow with me every place I went. We got this little apartment, and I found my next-door neighbor. And I liked her very much, and I thought, why do I like her so much? I found out she liked to drink. And her mother did come over one day and say to me, you know, you two drink too much. I said, I don't know about this. I learned over there, though, and this was back, like I said, somewhere in the 50s. Anyway, I learned that I could pick up the telephone and have them deliver beer and whiskey to the house. This is when they first started doing this. Well, my brother-in-law and his wife used to come over every Friday, and they'd come over, and the first thing he'd do to see how much I had in the house, and he'd pick up the telephone and put in his order for what he wanted and have it delivered to the house. And I was paying for it. I didn't like this because I knew he drank as much as I did, if not more. But anyway, it worked out. It was a year while Joe was gone. Things worked out. My sister-in-law had a rumor going around that I knew every bar in town, which I didn't, because I didn't know the bars in town at that time. But anyway, he came back, and we had to go to different places. We went to Minneapolis for him for more training. We always took the children with us and everything else like that. But I want to get on with my story a little bit as to some of my real bad drinking. We were stationed at Patrick Air Force Base, and I thought, this is great, because we had our housing right here, and block across was the officers' club, and block the other way was the bay, and you could do either way you wanted to go swimming, or go in the ocean, or if you wanted to have go to the officers' club, you could do that too. And I did that a lot. We did go to the officers' club a lot, and my husband, I have to bring him into the story because he was an alcoholic as well. I didn't realize this. I thought it was just me. Maybe I was drinking too much. I remember New Year's Eve at Patrick Air Force Base because it was my first blackout. New Year's Eve, we went in and had the parties and everything else. Came home. I guess we had an argument. I don't know. But the next day was New Year's Day, and if you've been in the military, or if you haven't been in the military, every New Year's Day you have to make the command performance and go to the officers' club for a half hour to greet your base commander, your commanding officer, etc., etc. Well, they made a punch. It was made with vodka, ginger ale, and some fruit, and also champagne. You drank a little bit of it, you get off the floor that high. You drank two, you get off that high. Three, you had it. Well, I remember having more than three. And like I said, we were supposed to stay there for about 30 minutes, 45 minutes, and that was it. We came home. And before we came home, though, we went to the bar, and we were talking to the bartender there, and he was cleaning up and all, and he was pouring this punch out. I said, what are you doing that for? He says, well, we can't save it. He says, why, do you want some? I said, yeah. Well, they had ginger ale bottles and other bottles, you know, that were made out of glass at that time. And he gave me two bottles to take home with him. He filled them up with the punch. I don't remember anything after that. I remember going home, and that was it. I don't remember anything more after that. I don't remember picking my kids up from the nursery or anything. All I remember is somebody banging on the door. And I thought, where am I? I was in the bathroom, lying on the floor, up against the door, nobody could come in, and I was passed out. So when I got up, of course, I was really upset about this, and that was the first blackout I ever had. But I was a thrower, too. I used to throw things. No. I made a lot of ceramics. I made these statues, ashtrays, lamps, everything else. I don't have one of those things in my life now. I threw them all. I remember my husband and I got into an argument one night, and I threw an alarm clock at him. And here we are, living on base quarters, and I had a nice big hole in the wall. I missed his head, but I got the wall. From there we moved to West Palm Beach, and that's the place to be. We lived just off base, and the officers' club was very close to the house. I met, my husband was in command of his squadron there, and he was drinking, and he never got picked up for drunken driving because he'd always make me drive. And I don't know how he got by with it. I remember him coming home one night, and he was a little upset, and I said, "What's the matter?" He says, "Well, the police stopped me." And I said, "Why?" He said, "I was driving down the wrong way on the wrong way street." So they took him to the base, and I don't know how he got home, but anyway, he did. This was where the drinking really started commencing a lot more. I met a woman there who was working, her husband, I guess he worked in my husband's squadron, but I'm not sure. But she was from, I don't know, Kentucky or Tennessee, someplace. Anyway, but we used to call her Nanny Ruth. And Nanny Ruth liked her beer. That's when they first start coming out with the big ones. And she taught me how to drink the big ones. She couldn't drive. She'd send me out. She'd come over and say, "Hey, let's do something today." And I said, "I can't. The kids are in school." "Oh, they won't be home till such and such a time." So we'd go downtown, presumably to go shopping. And she taught me how to go into bars. We had a lot of fun. Drinking shots and beer. I didn't drink those for very often because it made me sick. This is when I was starting to drink even more all the time. I remember having arguments with my husband. Many times I wouldn't, I meet him at the officers' club after the, after work, because if I'd have the car, I'd have to pick him up. And I'd take the kids with me, and I'd say, "You kids sit in the car," and I'll be, they were in school by this time. I said, "I'll be out in a couple of minutes." A couple of hours was more like it. I think they were raised on cherries, onions, olives, raw pizza dough, and all that stuff. So, like I said, we did do a lot of drinking there. 1958 came, and my husband got word that he was going over to Berlin. And I thought, oh boy, here we go again. So anyway, he went, he did go over, and I went and I stayed home with my sister-in-law this time, because we knew it would be a very short time that I'd be there. And my brother-in-law loved, like I said, he liked his beer and everything else. And he used to have to keep his down in the basement. His wife didn't like him drinking, and she'd say, "Keep yours down there." And it was warm all the time, so I knew where it was anyway. And we'd go out a couple times, and I taught my sister-in-law to have a Brandy Alexander, and she didn't like it, so I said, "Well, the heck with you." And so my brother-in-law and I went out a couple of times. But anyway, he went over to Berlin, got over to Berlin, and we were living, he was living at Tempelhof, if anybody knows Berlin at all. This was Hitler's pride and joy. The ceilings were about 12 feet tall, and there were hidden rooms underneath, different kind of alleyways, big pools, and the elevators. They had one elevator that just went up like this and came across and came down again, and you could get off at any floor you wanted to. And I got word that I was going to be coming over there, so I said, "Okay, I'll get my things ready." And I did get the passports and everything. We were all ready. We got our shots. Always had to have shots. And my brother-in-law and I were buddies about this time. And the morning that I was leaving, I knew I was not going to be able to make it to McGuire Air Force Base. And I went downstairs and I stole a beer from him in the basement, came upstairs, drank it, and thought, one's not going to do me any good, so I hid it in the back of a closet over there, and went down and got another one, and had another one, and emptied that, and put that, hid it in the closet. To this day, I don't know whatever happened to those bottles, because I just left them there, and that was it. But we got to McGuire Air Force Base, and I had the two children with me and everything else, and we were supposed to go over, and we went over on a troop transport. I was there with my children, and the rest of the plane was all filled with troops. We got there, the plane was late, taking off and all. They said, well, we won't be leaving for a couple of hours. So I said to my sister-in-law, well, let's go to the officers' club and have some lunch. Good lunch, you know, drinking lunch. I remember getting on that plane. I don't remember much after that. I knew we stopped in Ireland someplace. But when I got aboard that ship, like I said, it was full of troops and me and the two kids. My kids learned how to play poker. They learned every card game that you possibly learned. They took care of them. They fed them and everything else. When we got to Germany, my husband met me there because we couldn't fly into to Berlin at that time. That was during, you know, the corridor and everything else. And it kind of scared me. But we got aboard another troop carrier, and my husband was there, and the troop carrier was filled one end to the other with liquor. And I looked at this, and I said, hey, this is a good place to be. Well, it was the day before our wedding anniversary, and my husband kiddingly said, oh, we just came in down a booze run, and we had to fill up over here. So that's the way we got back to Berlin. Berlin was wonderful. I enjoy it. We lived in the hotel there, like I said. The kids would get on the bus in the morning, and I'd wave goodbye to them, and that would be the end of it till about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. My husband had planned to talk to the head waiters there and everything else, and they'd meet the kids coming off the bus, and they made sure they were fed. They knew everything that was going on. They learned to eat more things that I had never even eaten before, and to this day they said, boy, we ate good. I said, yes, you did, didn't you? And I enjoyed myself. I met a girl over there from, I guess she was Swiss, a red-headed girl. She and I got together, and of course we had wifely duties, you know, how you're supposed to go to the wife's club and everything else and whatnot. I'm pouring coffee one day and like this, because I was just hungover from the day before. But anyway, I can't remember this girl's name. She and I would go out, and we'd go to visit all the little bars and everything else. And she liked to drink. Of course, I knew people that liked to drink. And the only thing wrong with it is when she'd get a couple drinks at her, she'd yodel. Guess who learned how to yodel? I did. I was yodeling too. I was learning to yodel too. About this time, I hate to say this, my husband was moved out of Berlin and into one of the other places there in Germany. He lost his command at that time because of his drinking, and I wouldn't go with him. I said, no, I've got to stay here for the Air Force ball and everything else. But I did go, and by the time I got to go to be with him, I did not know he had found AA by this time. And Basha just kept drinking. I drank, and I loved martinis. Found another friend who loved martinis, too. I'll never forget one night, there I was, drinking martinis with her and everything else, and next thing I knew, I said to my husband, I'm going to bed. He said, you better. I don't know if anybody remembers those little packets or about like this. They were filled with little black licorice called Sen-Sen. Mm-hmm. Guess whose tongue was always black? Mine. I was eating Sen-Sen like crazy. So nobody knew I was drinking. Ha ha ha. Yes. And when I go to the bank to sign a check in, I'd be shaking and I said, oh, I've just had the flu. That's okay. Anyway, he had found the program, but I didn't. I remember this one night, though, when I was drinking martinis with this friend of mine, and I went and said, I'm going to bed, and my husband said, yeah, I think you better. And I went to bed and got in bed and could not move my legs, could not move my arms. I was paralyzed. And I thought, what's going to happen to me now? I'm really in big trouble right now. As it was, I woke up the next morning and I was in the psycho ward of the hospital. And the nurse said, you've got to get up, we've got things to do. I said, no, I'm not getting out of bed. I said, and I fought her, and I didn't, and the doctor came in. He said, just let her sleep it off and she'll be okay. So I did. I had to go down and see the doctor in his office the next day, and he asked me how much I drank. I said, a beer, scotch and soda, or what did I drink at all? I didn't tell him I drank them all at the same time. So my husband was there, and I stayed in that hospital for about a week, making wife, in the slippers, and I thought, this is great. If anybody had seen me like this, this would be the end of me. But anyway, I was only in there for a week, and when my husband came in to see him and everything, and my husband said to him, what can be done for her? He says, nothing, just take her home and don't let her drink. Real good. Lasted about a week. And that's about as all it's got. From there, we moved to Ramstein. And Ramstein was a big headquarters at that time. And my husband's commander at the time was real good friends with us. And their children and our children were together and all. And I didn't realize I was drinking as much as I was until I put my son on a train one Sunday, and we went down to see him off. He went down with the maid, because I had a full-time maid at the time, and he took off with her, and they went into the country someplace. I don't know where they went. To this day, I couldn't tell you where they were, but he was gone all summer. And when he came back, he spoke nothing but German. He worked all summer, earned a lot of money, and I didn't even know it was my own son. But at any rate, by this time, drinking was getting a little worse. My husband would go off to meetings. I didn't know this. Or if not, he called people on the telephone, and I thought, what's he doing talking to these people secretly, you know? And I didn't realize he was trying to talk to somebody in AA, and there was nobody on the base at that time. I did meet a Dr. Edwards there who explained what alcoholism was. I listened to him and everything else, and he told me at that time, and this was 1960, he told me at that time more than I know now probably about alcoholism. He knew everything, and he told me that he could help me. So I said, yeah, and that was it. I went home. And he said, would you like somebody to come visit you? I said, yeah. They didn't have any women, no women over there. And they did have a general's wife, but she wasn't allowed to go to other people's houses at that time and things like that. But I finally, that Sunday morning when I put my son on that train, I was sitting in my red room thinking, what's going to happen with me now? I was at my end. I couldn't drink myself drunk. I couldn't drink myself sober. And I finally ran down the hall. My husband was in the bathtub, and I opened the door, and I says, I need help. He looked at me and says, yeah. He says, what do you want to do? I said, I think I better go see Dr. Edwards. So he said, okay. And he got me and took me to the hospital, and Dr. Edwards met us there, and he said, I don't want to see anybody except you, Bosch. I said, okay. So I went in there, and he said to me, what do you think your problem is? I said, alcohol. And he said, now we can move down to business. So he put me in the hospital for a week, ran all these tests and everything else, and everything came out well. I do have to tell you one thing while we were in Ramstein, though. I don't know whether I was the cleanest or the dirtiest person there. because you had certain days that you could allow, we were allowed to wash our clothes and dry them, and you had to dry them out in the basement there and everything else. And I had a washing machine that I had brought over from the States, and I was using that. And I used to wash clothes every single day. Whether they were clean, whether they were dirty, or whether they were, the reason I did this was because I used to hide my stuff down in the basement. I'd go off to the they used to call it the Class 6 store, where they sold all the liquor and everything else, and we had rations. They never took my rations. I still know them too well. I'd go in there, and I always carried a big purse. And my husband had watched me from the second floor. He'd watched me walk down those two blocks. I'd walk as straight as could be. Coming back, I was leaning to one side. Because I used to carry a six-pack and a fish. And when I'd come upstairs, he didn't know what happened to the stuff. I was hiding it downstairs between the washing machines while I was washing clothes and everything else. I could still remember that, though. But a woman came over to see me. I don't know who she is. I couldn't tell you where she came from or where Dr. Edwards got her from, whatnot. And the first thing I offered her was a drink. She says, "No, that's not what we do." She said, "We don't drink." I said, "Okay." That was it. But I found out we had one meeting a week. I did go to that meeting. It was on a Monday night. Six men and Basha. And that was it. And to this day, I can remember the second or third week that I was there, they made me secretary, treasurer, everything else. I had to wash the dishes, make the coffee, sweep the floor. What I did learn was my 12 steps, and the traditions were in at that time. And I learned my steps. Everything was going fine. I did everything that I was supposed to do. I went through Christmas, Thanksgiving, New Year's. Everything was great. February came along, and they have the wine fest. And I had 6 months in the program at this time. And a friend of mine came over from Heidelberg, one of my best friends, and she brought a bottle of wine with her. And she said to me, "Don't touch this. I know what your problem is." And I said, "Yeah." I said, "I've got a meat. I've got 6 months in the program. I'm not drinking." I remember opening that bottle, pouring her a glass of wine, and don't remember anything more. This is how bad it gets. It gets worse every time you pick up a drink. And the next day was the 13th. Of February, and they were having a big wine fest party at the club. My husband and I won the dancing contest for our costumes and everything else, and I haven't had a drink since. This was very, very hard for me because one meeting a week. They say make 90 meetings in 90 days. It would have taken me a couple of years to make some time. Came back to the States. We're up in Maine, one meeting a week. We lived in Caribou, Maine, and then we'd have to travel. We were there for 3 years. Before we left, we had 3 meetings started. Moved to Japan, one meeting a week. And this was in Tokyo. We'd get on the train at noon on Saturday, go into Tokyo, and maybe have a bite to eat before we get there, have a meeting at 5 o'clock. Then we'd go out for dinner, everybody that was there. We had the Japanese with us many, many times. And it was great to watch them because, holding hands to say the Our Father. They say, "No drinking, no drinking, no drinking." But then we had to get on the train again, and then we'd get home about midnight. So it took us a half a day to do these meetings. And I said, "I don't know how we're going to make it out here." We did leave Japan. By the time we left Japan, we had 9 meetings going. and I think there were 2 on our base in all. Most of our meetings were with men, We came back to the States and went to Langley Air Force Base, and by this time my husband was coming down, getting sicker and sicker, and they had to retire him. I learned a lot while he was sick, because when I got to Virginia, he couldn't go to meetings with me at all. And I would go to the colleges, I'd speak at the schools. He went to Hampton University at that time, and I don't know whether you know Hampton. I'm going to shut up in a minute. Hampton University was all black college at that time, and he went there to school. And while he was at school, I'd go to the different schools and colleges and all, and I'd do my seat, you know. Well, he found out he was going to have to retire, so we took a trip down here to Florida, looked around the Orlando area and everything. This was in 1968. And in 1969, we moved from Virginia to Orlando. First meeting we came to, they only had about 6 or 7 meetings in the area. The closest one to our house was the Presbyterian Church down on Magnolia. It's no longer there. So after a number of years, my husband and I started another meeting at the home group at St. Peter and Paul Church on Halbranch Road. And that's been going on for 20 years there. And I've been going to more meetings now than I have ever gone to. My son is with me. He helps take care of me because Mom is getting old. Mom's 83 years old now. I just celebrated my 50th anniversary in February. And he says, Mom, you're going to live till 113. He's in the program now, and he's got more going for him than I ever had before. I have a daughter. She drinks. I can't do anything about it. I've got a grandson. He's supposed to pick up his 2-year chip this year. I don't know whether he'll be able to do it or not, though, but he's been going to meetings. I can tell you one thing. Get involved with whatever you do. The most things, I would go down to the intergroup office at least once or twice a week and help Melanie and all. I'm a delegate for my group. We go to different meetings. I live in Lake Mary now. Some of the meetings there I do go to, but we come back here to Orlando for the rest of the meetings. All I can say is get yourself involved, and it doesn't hurt because you can't keep it unless you give it away. Today I could say I think I've given it away quite a bit. And I thank my higher power, which I call God, because he's there all the time. And every day, at night, in the morning I get up and I say, thank you for allowing me to awaken this morning and help me through the day and keep my attitude great. At night, I say, thank you. And that's all you have to say. You don't have to say anything more. And you're there. All I can say is, keep coming back and you'll make it to 50 or more. Thank you very much.